Dr. Carol Eaton, our Executive Director of Instructional Data Services, Justin Hoke, our Director of Assessment. To my right, Cecily Klein, Director of Curriculum and Instruction, supporting Math and Science. Jen Steele, Director of Curriculum and Instruction, supporting English, Language Arts, and Social Studies. When you think of our earlier presentation, we were able to celebrate the successes of five of our schools. That data, as well as all the other data from all of our other schools, rolls up to give us a systems perspective, a JEFCO perspective of how our students are doing. Tonight, we plan to give you that district overview of all of our CMAS data, have some discussion about ELA, math, career, and college readiness, and really our next steps is where do we go from here. Like Dr. Glass, this team and many of our colleagues are very proud of the work that our students have done and the work that our teachers have done to support their learning. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Carol Eaton, who'll walk us through the data slides.
So just to begin, to facilitate conversation and interaction with the board, we're going to try something new in the way we're presenting. We're going to break the presentation into three parts. So we're going to start with English Language Arts and then pause for dialogue and conversation, move on to math and science, pause for dialogue and conversation and comments, and then pause and then have college readiness and pause again. So if that works for the board, we're going to try that tonight.
Be fine, Dr. Eaton.
Great. Okay. Okay, so starting with English Language Arts, this first graph compares the percent of students who met or exceeded CMAS expectations for JEFCO, that's the purple bar, and Colorado, the blue bar. So as you can see, JEFCO exceeded the state performance in all grade levels. This slide shows JEFCO's progress over time. So the purple bar shows JEFCO's most recent 2017 performance compared to 2016 results represented by the blue bar. And JEFCO demonstrated increased performance in all grade levels for English Language Arts. CMAS median growth percentiles show how students grew over time compared to their academic peers. JEFCO's English Language Arts median growth percentile of 52 overall exceeds the state's 50th percentile. And overall, JEFCO improved by 3 points compared to 2016. Subgroup growth is an area for improvement. You can see that pre-reduced price eligible students, males, students on individual education plans, and minority students continue to be areas of growth, although we have shown some improvement. Additional slides in the appendix of this presentation provide detailed support performance data that are available for review on the subgroups, but will not be presented tonight due to time. But there's a lot of additional charts or subgroups in the appendix.
Okay, so I have the honor and privilege of speaking to some of the specific supports being provided by curriculum and instruction. As we reflect on our district's strengths and challenges, and specifically in early literacy, we're provided with the opportunity to celebrate those really bright spots in our literacy data and potentially adjust or enhance early literacy supports within our system. We recognize that many of our challenges in literacy are highlighted in the growth and achievement gaps among genders. So boys, and we are really trying to focus on our boy readers specifically. Also looking at minority students and students of poverty and how we can intentionally close those gaps early so that they don't exist as students move up through our system. While I cannot lift up all of the impactful work taking place in our schools, I can share with you some of the work of our team in curriculum and instruction and educational research and design. So some examples include our teams revised the units of study for the JEFCO curriculum based on impact, based on research and feedback from our colleagues in our schools. And we have recently implemented the Bridge to Curriculum, and so are uploading resources and assessments for teachers, as well as encouraging them to go ahead and upload their own resources and assessments. We have implemented the Lucy Calkins Reading Units of Study and a workshop model in just about 20% of our elementary schools. Most of those came to English Language Arts asking for support as they implement that structure. We also have, in the last year, published the iCali, which is the Interactive Comprehensive Approach to Literacy Instruction. We have provided ongoing professional learning around topics such as visible thinking routines and how to implement a reader's workshop in the literacy block. We've also partnered heavily with our early learning team around the P3 work for discovery reading and differentiated learning or layered centers. Some examples of the intervention work that we have done. Sorry, my mouth is dry from allergies. Some of our intervention work includes the 20 literacy interventionists that are in 20 of our schools, our J-cell work that Amanda mentioned earlier. This year we had more than 800 students sign up and attend J-cell in our 7 schools this summer. Our REDAC team constantly collaborates, partners with teachers, and is constantly on the go around the support of students who, not only students who have a READ plan, but all students. So everything from core instruction to intervention to meet the individual needs of students. And then we have strong partnerships with our instructional coaches and our digital teacher librarians, knowing that they are teacher leaders in their building who can directly impact and make a difference on literacy for all of our kiddos. And of course, JEFCO 2020 competencies live and breathe through English language arts, and so this year as we are implementing the 2020 vision, the 2020 competencies, and really making, elevating the work of the 2020 competencies around authentic tasks, really providing students with relevance, with a voice and choice, being able to engage with literacy as part of inquiry-based learning. So the 2020 competencies are starting to become alive and well. It's part of the language, a part of the vocabulary that we're hearing from teachers in schools. And of course, we would love to close all gaps so that we never have a third grade board goal around early literacy. So thank you. So questions, wonderings? This is our new format.
I just want to quickly compliment you because I did see consistent improvement. Congratulations on growth going up. Notably, 3% is significant. Mm-hmm. And also in a couple subgroups, we may not be where we want to be, but the males went up 4%, and our IEP students went up 4%, and that's a big deal, so congratulations on that. I'm just curious, increased demand for more instructional support. Talk to me about what's the increased demand?
Well, right now what we're hearing is that there's a really strong movement toward wanting to know about best instructional practices from current research, current data. And so many schools have spent some time engaging in some of the most recent publications from people who write about literacy, write about literacy cross-content, are talking about 21st century skills. So schools are engaging in these studies and then coming to us and saying, hey, can you help us? Can you partner? We would love to include you in the learning and then have you be our thought partner as we walk the road of improvement.
So the PLC work maybe is generating conversations, yes. And they're calling out to you and saying, hey.
Yes.
Okay,
yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
If I could just add, the work that our educational research and design team has done has been very focused on supporting schools based on their requests. Last year, for example, we had 4,326 requests to come visit schools, partner with them, have those conversations, lead the PLCs, offer professional development, plan side by side with teachers. And so we're so excited that teachers are reaching out. Now we're in a position where we think about increased demand. We are thinking about how do we prioritize that. Do we first support our schools that need the most support, our PETA schools, our low-performing schools, and then really think about how do we organize support around some of the major initiatives when we think about student tasks, when we think about planning, when we think about supporting schools to include the JEFCO 2020 competencies. So truth be told, it's a really nice problem to have. We are happy to go out and support teachers alongside of them as they work. And we're at the point now where we're thinking about how do we prioritize those requests.
I have a question on page 3. So when I was looking, tell me if I'm right in thinking this way. If you look at grade 4, 16, and then grade 5, 17, that's a cohort, right?
You're talking about growth?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I mean, I was looking at the 6th to 7th then, 6th graders in 2016 to 7th in 2017. And I guess, it's growth, but I thought that was interesting. I feel like the seventh grade, and then I was looking at the seventh grade scores, and I was wondering if there's something about that seventh grade test that's more, how it feels like there are challenges in that seventh grade test, or I don't know.
I can tell you.
I felt that way last year, too. I was looking at my notes last year, and I don't know. Any thoughts? Am I making sense?
Yes, and I cannot speak to the test and whether or not it's is asking of, you know, asking English language arts demands of students that are appropriate or not. That would be up to Colorado Department of Education. However, I can tell you that over the last 3 years, our secondary English language arts team has partnered with teachers who have come together to create reading assessment practices and writing assessment practice support. So student checklists as readers and writers, continuum to support teachers as they meet with students to set goals as readers and writers, rubrics and learning progressions have been created, not necessarily from the English language arts team, but they have facilitated teachers coming together from middle school and high school and then implemented those tools in the classroom so that they could adjust before taking it to scale. So we too have recognized that little conundrum there between seventh and eighth grade. We're working on it side by side with teachers.
Is there a true continuum, do you think? I mean, like MAP, you know, there. I remember CSAP, there really wasn't, because one year they tested poetry and the year before they decided to do nonfiction. And so there wasn't a true continuum to really be comparing growth with a cohort. Do you feel like, is it even, I don't know, I'm a data wonk and I'm always looking at cohort groups. I don't know.
I think the tests do have different forms from year to year, so you will be seeing some differences. They do try to test nonfiction text and fiction text, and so they try to have some consistency between forms. And it's not a true cohort given our mobility. So right. There's some noise in that comparison.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a conundrum for us, too.
Anything else on English scores? Let's move on.
Okay, so the second part of our presentation will focus on CMAS math and science. And in this chart, we're seeing a comparison between JEFCO, the purple bar, to the blue bar, which is the state. And by overall grade levels, JEFCO exceeded the state performance across the board. And just a reminder about that eighth grade math score. The eighth grade bar does not represent the entire grade level. So the eighth grade bar, actually our eighth graders, about a third of our eighth graders are represented in that Algebra 1 and that Geometry bar. And so when you combine eighth grade math with that Algebra and Geometry eighth graders, we exceed the state.
Thank you for acknowledging that.
Allie and I debate that. I still think it's important that we break it out to recognize that we still have work to do, but in terms of perception, it is a bit misleading, so thank you for that clarification.
Right. It is, and if you hadn't brought it up, I would have.
So this next chart shows the one-year trend in CMAS math achievement in JEFCO, and all but two assessments improved or remained stable compared to the prior year. And then as we look at JEFCO's overall median growth percentile, it's 53rd percentile that improved in CMAS math compared to the prior year, and we continue to exceed the state. Similar to English language arts, our subgroup performance showed some improvement, especially for students with disabilities, where the median growth percentile increased from the 42nd percentile to 48.5 percentile. So that's a great change. Now we're going to skip to the science charts, because we want to talk about these two together. So for CMAS science, this chart shows JEFCO, which is the purple bar, compared to the state, again, the blue bar. And again, JEFCO exceeds state performance at all grade levels. And then looking at our two-year trend in science, you'll see that the district performance improved across all grade levels compared to the prior year.
So I get to talk about the math and science. We have celebrated our strengths from 2016 and 17 and really have begun to start to analyze and develop some supports of how we really started to think about the key phases of student learning in math. So we've started to kind of peel back the onion and see where these points of struggle and identification happen for kids. We began to start to think about that foundational piece around number sense. Are we ensuring that our kiddos have that number sense really solid in our pre-K through three? We're looking about how do we really support that and make sure that our kids are solid with those pieces. Then the next layer is moving from the transition for our mathematicians from that concrete to representational. And that takes place in fourth and fifth grade. So again, we're looking at kiddos to really see how, if we have these pieces in place and kids have these pieces in place, their success. And then we're also looking at that third phase around ensuring the conceptual understanding is in place in that eighth and ninth grade so that students can transfer their knowledge and skills into that advanced math. And again, how are we supporting at each of these three spots? We continue with our limited resources to prioritize the math support for our title schools and schools that have UIPs in math. And really work to be able to help schools in that planning. To be able to catch our earliest learners, we are working really closely with schools around developing common assessments for units, intentionally planning engaging classrooms, and analyzing multiple data points to ensure students' needs are being supported. In our secondary schools, we're continuing to develop those pathways, really thinking about a kiddo who's struggling in Algebra 1. How do we help develop that pathway to help them make sure that they can get through and get the rigor and the learning that they need to be successful? And we continue to refine our assessments and resources in our Bridge to Curriculum so teachers really have what they need at their fingertips to be able to meet the needs of all learners. So that's math. Now let me take a minute to speak about science. In science, we see similar concerns in our data that we have in math. We have similar subgroup data concerns and similar gap data concerns. Again, to support this, we are really working to provide opportunities for planning, strategizing, really thinking about how do we increase that rigorous classroom and ensuring that it's an inquiry learning opportunity for our science classrooms. So, questions for science and math.
So I don't know that this lives only in science and math, but if we recognize that subgroup data is relatively unchanged, I feel as though those PLC guiding questions, what do kids need to know? How do we know they know it? What do we do when they don't? What do we do when they do? We are seeing through math acceleration that those students have been rightly identified. They're succeeding in that framework. But question number three, what do we do when they don't? I response to intervention, push in versus pull out. I'm curious to know, systemically, where are the outliers that are seeing growth? Since that seems to be just persistent, and not just in JeffCo, that's right. Obviously, that is just persistently a challenge.
Right. So let me just make sure I understand your question. You're really curious about what are the implications for kiddos that are not achieving where they need to achieve from their common assessments that are developed by
when
the PLC.
We notice they're not where we want them to be.
Right. So schools are doing a variety of models. We have.
Tell me about the ones tell me about the outlier schools where you're seeing that third question, those students who are not at grade
right.
level achieving significant growth.
Right. So I would say the outliers are really utilizing their differentiation and utilizing their math workshop to provide opportunities for kids to accelerate as well as to reteach or reinforce those skills that need to be in place. The outliers are also really being intentional about flexible scheduling and working as a team to have groups of kids move so that they can really pinpoint the needs of that group. So a middle school, I was working with a middle school, and they have 3 seventh grade math classes. So in that seventh grade math class, they are figuring out, we've got a group of kiddos that are missing this concept. So not using the entire, keeping all of the kids that are missing this in for the entire block of, you know, weeks upon weeks, but really being flexible and saying, these 2 days, we're going to focus on this concept to support these kiddos so that they can ensure that they have the concept so that they can move forward. Does that make sense?
So there's flexibility so that there's movement between those classes based on student learning needs, not just who's on my roster.
Right, and it's not not for the entire semester. That flexibility ebb and flows throughout, this school really did a 10-day structure.
One other suggestion I would offer to that answer would be the great work that our teachers of our youngest learners really embrace. They really want to make sure that students understand number sense before they move to computational fluency. For example, to know when you think of subitizing, to know that the number 6 represents 6 popsicle sticks, 6 ice cream cones, and you can make that connection. There's 6 here, and that is represented by the number 6. Then if you think about 3 popsicles and 3 ice cream cones also represent a total of number 6. Kids really need to be able to make that connection to what does that number mean before they get into how do we add 6 plus 6 plus 6 plus 6. Getting to that computational part of the work before a deep understanding of the number sense oftentimes turns into memorization where kids can't connect back to the purpose of what they're doing. And what one of our working theories is that if we rush too quickly to do that and math becomes memorization, that about 4th grade, when math becomes more abstract, then we're compromising their ability to understand the context and be able to apply and transfer that skill because we've rushed to their ability to compute numbers. And so our teachers of our earliest learners are really focusing on how do we make sure they understand what numbers mean, then move on to the computational part so that abstract thinking, algebraic thinking, geometry makes sense in that transfer and application stage.
If I might add, just from the side for a minute, Mr. Flores, the first best intervention is quality core instruction. Those schools who are finding the most success with their interventions are ones who are using them as a supplement, not to supplant their core instruction. So we can't expect kids to do well on things that we don't give them the opportunity to go after. For example, if we think about our D'Evelyn friends earlier today, our tennis team does not get better by going out and practicing soccer. Right? So core instruction in those things that matter, that they're going to be assessed on, matters first. And then the intervention is to supplement that, not be in place of that. So those schools who've had the most success are first looking at quality core instruction and then saying, what do we do on top of, not in place of that?
A great example of that is ColorStrand. And there's other great examples in Jeffco, but that principal, those teachers, recognized that there was more interventions in place than there were kids being successful in core. So that principal directed those teachers in partnership to say, how do we really truly attend to core instruction and make sure the skills that we're expecting of kids are cemented in their learning before we move on? It's directly to Mr. Carroll's point. How do we ensure that the best first instruction is really the foundation for learning, and then we can build upon that for the purpose of application and transfer thereafter?
Well, and my compliments to you, Mr. Carroll, because I know you focused on that message of supplement, not supplant, and every student is a general education student before they're a special education student. My hope is that that's carried forward, and we're seeing the results in some of those significant leaps. So thank you for that reminder.
Yeah, and I wanted to thank you for pointing out the IEP growth increases, which are really significant and really important. I was at an event and had a parent who attends a lot of the special education committee meetings, and how it just meant a lot to her seeing that data and that growth, and just wanted to share that with you. And I know it was highlighted in ELA too, but math was really significant. And just what I've seen, at least in middle schools, some smaller classrooms to focus on some of our challenged learners and a diverse group. So those learners may be on IEPs, or they may not be. but for whatever reason, they have those challenges that you're each talking about, and that repetition, that reinforcement, and that community, that collegiality, that they can be leaders in their own classroom. I've seen significant impact at the middle school level when you introduce all those factors together. And I don't know how that teases out with all the different grade levels, and I've seen some of the other data, but just wanted to point out some of those things, too, do make a difference for challenge learners. And that growth is really impressive.
I think we are close to concluding this presentation. I would like to say to all of you, thank you for the work that you do. When I look at results like this, I simply want to give credit to the teachers in our schools, because nothing happens until they are delivering in every classroom. And I do appreciate the instructional support teams. I think those are important too. But tonight I would say congratulations and thank you to our teachers.
Thank you. And we also want to celebrate some of the successes we see with our students who take PSAT and SAT. So one more quick section on the presentation.
I'm sorry, Mr. Flores. I have done that a little too often. I couldn't remember what the last topic was. You know?
Well, we'll work through this one and more opportunity for dialogue and discussion around the successes of our 9th and 10th graders.
Please continue.
So our third and final section covers PSAT and SAT results, and you'll see a similar pattern that we've been working through. Compared to Colorado, Jeffco's mean scale score for PSAT exceeded the state in evidence-based reading and writing, which you'll see is abbreviated EBRW, and in math. The next slide is about college and career readiness benchmarks. So according to College Board, college and career readiness means that a student has a 75% likelihood of achieving at least a C in a related semester, first semester course in college. So for PSAT, about 3/4 of Jeffco's 10th graders were considered college or career ready in reading and writing, and about half of our students were considered college or career ready in math. 2017 was the first year that SAT was administered statewide as Colorado's college entrance test. It was replacing the Colorado ACT. Now, similar to PSAT, Jeffco exceeded the state's mean scale score for the SAT in both reading and writing and in math. SAT college and career readiness benchmarks for Jeffco are slightly lower to that when compared to PSAT in reading and writing, and about the same for math. Now, for the first time, CDE was able to calculate a new type of growth. They were able to produce growth percentiles for students who took PSAT in grade 10 and compare that to those who took SAT in grade 11. Jeffco's reading and writing median was at the 54th percentile and 54th percentile for EBRW and 56th percentile for math. Those both exceeded the state. Similar subgroup gaps exist as we saw in the CMAS growth data, although Jeffco exceeded the state's median growth percentiles for a majority of our subgroups.
So when we think about college and career readiness, we are proud of the successes in evidence-based reading and writing and math, and we will continue to work to ensure that we can close achievement gaps and meet the needs of all students, regardless of what grade they are at. As we move forward, the first bullet, working with teachers to create and implement authentic tasks, Dr. Glass's charge for our district to really find authentic learning experiences for students is spot on with what our kids are saying, with what our teachers are asking for. Truly working to implement authentic tasks will make learning relevant, incorporates our Jeffco 2020 competencies, and invites students to engage in their learning in a way that's relevant from their perspective. Additionally, you heard tonight from Vivian Elementary, thinking about how do we prioritize support for our low-achieving schools. We know these schools have dedicated teachers and staff and are committed to the success of their children. Some of our next steps include prioritizing that support. You heard Principal Carter talk about the red phone status. How do we make sure that they have a lifeline to the supports that they need? We also heard a little bit about how do we help them to keep the main thing, and give them opportunity to kind of clear the road so that that's the focus, regardless of what other initiatives might be intriguing to them or their staff in Jeffco. We will continue to work towards those efforts and make sure that we support our low-achieving schools with the access to the support very quickly and help them to keep the main thing the main thing.
When it comes to some of what we've discussed tonight, we've really focused on that academic achievement as measured through standardized tests. And we know that that's not what is the end-all and be-all to prepare our students for beyond our system. So we're really working at that next level of how do we measure the 2020 competencies? How do we get to know whether our students are attaining the expectations that we're setting for their readiness beyond 12th grade? In addition, as Amanda pointed out earlier, we have a need to look at those PLC questions, especially diving into the how do we know? How do we know whether a student is succeeding or needs that extra bit of support for them to get to that level of success that we anticipate? To help with that, we are really focusing on building that capacity across our system with understanding the student data. What are our students able to do? What do they need to do to be even more successful? And how do we adjust our instruction to meet those needs for all learners, regardless of any label that's placed on them?
So if there are additional questions, we'll be happy to answer those at this time.
I had a question, and I know we had talked about this before. The ninth graders taking a modified PSAT, I think it was one section wasn't in there. It was a written section was out, and or a discussion about starting that in eighth grade for a different purpose, not necessarily what you're talking about, but to another data point of areas that may or may not be translating to at least this benchmark. Is that something we're still thinking about continuing, or what is happening with that? Or did I just make that up and that's not happening?
There's a lot of school-based decision-making around what assessments
that's
they what I was, might
okay,
use.
That's,
around.
Okay.
So we have some middle schools that choose to do a PSAT 8 to start thinking about what that looks like as students transition to the ninth grade. So that's not a district or a state process, but there are some middle schools that have been thinking about doing a PSAT 8. And then ninth grade will be implemented this year.
So, and I was kind of focusing on ninth grade first. So that is going to be district wide.
It's a new Colorado state test.
Okay.
So no more CMAS in ninth grade. We now take the PSAT 9.
And will that be the entire test, or will it still be missing that written section of it?
The writing essay section is optional. So state law says that we offer it to students, and it's completely optional, and students decide if they want to take the essay portion. But we do have evidence-based reading and writing is both reading and writing, but then there's a separate essay section that is completely optional, and many students choose not to take it.
Okay. And then is that data we're going to track then for these purposes or no?
Because we don't really have school-wide data or district-wide data, or statewide data, it's very difficult to track that at an aggregated level. We look mostly at the individual student, and they would use it for their purposes of college applications.
Right. Okay.
So I have a question. I have to unmute. With regard to the PSAT and SAT tests, those obviously are national tests, and so we should have the ability to compare our scores not just with Jeffco, not just with the state, where we're going to have a high correlation, but with the broader score. Can you provide that information? How do we and Colorado stack up that way?
So that question gets a bit complicated, and the reason for that is Colorado is mandating it across the state, whereas several states don't mandate it at all, so only a section of students mm-hmm. are actually taking it for the purpose of getting into college. When we compare to the national results, we want to take that information very seriously, that there's only a certain level of comparability beyond Colorado. There are some other states that do require SAT. I believe there are about 8 or 9 that are using that as their college readiness exam. We can absolutely start to dig in a bit deeper. That's not something that's readily available to us through the College Board portal, but it would be something that we could explore through other State Department of Eds.
I'm assuming that just like with the ACT and the states that delivered that universally, that will be transparent information once it's published in those states.
I've got a question about one of the recipient group graphs, subgroup, we call them here, page 34. When I'm looking at that graph, I feel like I need an explanation. Are people staffed out of ELL? Like if they're very proficient, I feel like they were the higher, I mean, I'm looking at the graph and I'm thinking, boy, if you didn't know anything about the ELL program, some of this might be a little shocking. But if I remember correctly, I think people do staff out because they are very proficient. Is that correct? Like at older grade levels?
Correct. And when you see the FEP, the Fluent English Proficient, there's 2 years of monitoring to make sure that students are meeting the expectation of being able to speak both languages and be assessed and communicate and participate in their educational program in both languages. After 2 years of monitoring, it's not necessarily staffed out. They're always considered an English language learner, okay, but they don't qualify in some of the categories that are listed.
Are there scores included in perhaps the sixth grade then, if they are being monitored?
I believe they're included in FEP. Yes, they're included in the FEP.
Okay.
Fluent English Proficient.
Then does to make more sense out of that, do you know how we compare with the state as far as ELA, FEP, LEP, and NEP?
We can find more specific information. I think our Fluent English Proficient students have regularly outperformed the state for the past few years. I'd want to do a little more research to answer the other two categories.
Thank you.
Other comments or questions? Mr. Flores, is it really time to end the presentation, or do you have one more step?
Now's the time to wrap it up, unless there are more questions, of course.
We're good?
Yes.
Let me say then again, thank you for the work that you do. Thanks to all of our teachers for the work that they do. We are making progress. We have work to do. That's the simple summary of things, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move now to Item 8.02, a sensitive legal matter, and I see that our legal counsel is at the table in front of me. In accordance with Board Executive Limitation Policies EL3, Staff Treatment, and EL12, School Safety, the following agenda item is brought forward to the Board. On November 30th, 2016, the superintendent submitted to the board a recommendation for dismissal of a teacher pursuant to the provisions of the Teacher Employment, Compensation, and Dismissal Act of 1990, Colorado Revised Statutes, Section 22-63-101, commonly referred to as the Act. Proper written notice of intent to dismiss was provided to the teacher. The teacher requested a hearing on the superintendent's recommendation in accordance with the Act, which was held before an impartial hearing officer selected jointly by the teacher and the district. The hearing officer conducted a two-day hearing on May 8 and 9 of 2017. At the conclusion of the hearing officer provided detailed written findings of fact and recommended that the teacher be dismissed for neglect of the teacher's duties and for other good and just cause. Pursuant to the provisions of the Act, the Board of Education shall review the hearing officer's findings of fact and recommended decision and enter a written order to either dismiss, retain, or place the teacher on a one-year probation within 20 days after the date of the hearing officer's written order. The teacher waived this 20-day requirement pending the Board of Education's meeting tonight on September 7th, 2017 to decide this matter. District staff have reviewed the hearing officer's 16-page written decision and advises the Board of Education to accept the hearing officer's findings of fact and recommended decision to dismiss the teacher. We have been provided with resolutions for each of the three possible actions that our board members could take. Do I have a motion from the board on this agenda item?
Mr. Mitchell, I move that the board adopts the written order for dismissal of Daniel Stever as entered into the record, please.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we adopt the written order to dismiss said teacher. Discussion.
I think our role, among other things, is to make sure the process was followed for the benefit of the teacher. The record reflects that notice was given. A two-day hearing was conducted where the facts were thoroughly considered, and the order thoroughly considers the circumstances justifying the dismissal. And I see no reason not to agree with that recommendation.
Other discussion?
I read everything too, and these are difficult decisions, and I know it was challenging for everyone that was involved in it. And I would concur that the process, the facts to the policies, and the two-day hearing, that it was evaluated completely and proper process was followed. So I don't see a reason to set aside or modify the recommendations.
I guess I would like to say that it matters to me that as a district we follow due process, that our employees are afforded that. I believe that's been done. The recommendation of our superintendent and, frankly, the recommendation of an independent hearing officer are very important to me, and those are the things that allow me to make an important and significant decision like this one. Hearing no further discussion, the motion before us is to adopt a written order to dismiss Daniel Stever as entered into the record. Roll call, please.
Ms. Harmon?
Yes.
Ms. LaSalle?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Mr. Rupert?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
Okay. We thank you, Mr. Hess. As it turned out, everything went okay, but thank you for being here. We'll move now to the policy work that is on our agenda this evening. Our first item is policy adoption of policies AD and AE. State statutes require that the Board of Education approval of district policies AD, school safety, and AE accreditation. On June 1st, 2017, the board took policies AD and AE under study and requested a slight revision on AE. Proposed revisions have been reviewed and approved by District Cabinet and the Policy Review Committee. Proposed policy revisions are also shared with employee association groups. Input received from employee associations was incorporated when appropriate. Policy AD school safety was updated previously on September 16th by adding a few words to reflect changes in the law. Policy AE accreditation was updated to reflect changes in district practices. Last year, the Cabinet established the Policy Review Committee to revise district policies and regulations in order to reduce redundancies and ensure legal compliance. The Policy Review Committee consists of individuals from each key subject area in the district. Representatives of this group met with Colorado Association of School Boards, CASB staff, entrusted with overseeing policy development for school districts. Once policy revisions are adopted by the board, the policies are posted online for all impacted staff members. Is there a motion on policies AD and AE?
Mr. Mitchell, I move that the board adopts revisions to district policies AD, school safety, and AE accreditation as presented.
Is there a second?
A second.
It's been moved and seconded that we adopt the revisions to policy AD and policy AE. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please, Ms. Neal.
Ms. Harmon.
Yes.
Ms. LaSalle.
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell.
Yes.
Mr. Rupert.
Yes.
Ms. Stevens.
Yes.
Okay, we will move now to a review of policies. This is actually a policy adoption on EL4. On June 1st, the board reviewed executive limitations policy EL4, staff compensation, and took proposed revisions from staff under study. Is there a motion on policy EL4?
I move that the board adopts revisions to board executive to EL4 limitation and staff compensation as presented. Is this?
Yeah.
Is there a second?
Second.
And moved and seconded that we adopt revisions to board executive limitation policy EL4 related to staff compensation. Is there discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Ms. Harmon.
Yes.
Ms. LaSalle.
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell.
Yes.
Mr. Rupert.
Yes.
Ms. Stevens.
Yes.
The annual work plan for the Board of Education includes the review of GP or executive limitations policies, board policies monthly. The board has reviewed executive limitation policy EL1, global executive constraint. Board members, are there any suggested revisions to executive limitations policy 1? Hearing no revisions, we will move on to our next agenda item, which is executive limitations policy 6. We are in the process of reviewing these policies. This has been in our documents for our review. Board members, are there any revisions to executive any proposed revisions to executive limitations policy 6? Hearing no revisions, we'll move to our next policy. This policy is EL9. It deals with and is titled Emergency Superintendent Succession. This policy, again, has been in our materials and packets. Board members, are there any revisions that you see as necessary for EL policy 9? Or policy EL9, sorry. Hearing none, we will move to, I think, our final policy review item for the evening. That policy is Executive Limitations 12, School Safety. Again, this review is part of our annual work plan. Board members, are there any revisions to policy EL12?
No proposed revisions, but I do want to acknowledge that part of the EL12 school safety is about resources, and I noticed that a number of items on our consent agenda today are related to grants that provide a lot of resources to support students and create a safe school environment. I just want to be mindful as a board member and ask Dr. Glass, as our superintendent, to help us be keenly aware of what we discover works when it comes to prevention, intervention, and crisis response, so that as grants come into and then time out in the district, that we're ready and forward-looking about the kinds of resources that we need to make sure are in place to support successful work. Because I think the policy stands, but...
So this is, Ms. Stevens, and I'm just checking for understanding here, this is a comment without recommendation for
no
revision.
No proposed revision.
So that is not a recommendation for a revision. Are there any?
No.
Hearing no recommendations for revisions, we will move on to the next item on our agenda. The next item on our agenda is public comment part two. This section is for people who wish to address the board on items that were not on our original agenda. We generally spend some time talking about how much time the individuals have to speak and why, and the fact that we expect presentations to be done with mutual respect here in the boardroom. However, tonight we have one citizen scheduled to speak to the board under public comment part two. He has spoken to us before. He knows that he will have 3 minutes, and so at this time, I'm simply going to call Mr. Jim Fernald to the microphone.
No.
We can do it either way, Jim.
Is that on?
Yes.
Okay.
We are live, Mr. Fernald.
Right. Thank you. I would like to join in welcoming Dr. Glass to Jeffco. I've heard him speak at several events, and I appreciate his enthusiasm and his dynamic interactions. Perhaps that dynamism is what we need at this moment in history versus a few years ago, when perhaps a more calming influence was needed, as with Mr. McMenemy. But as usual, I want to raise a concern. In discussing where education should be headed in the future, he has used the terms sit and get and memorization and compliance in what were clearly meant to be very pejorative ways, and I could not disagree more. In order to demonstrate critical thinking, one needs something critical to think about. Learning about history, literature, mathematics, the sciences, and so forth is not sitting and getting in a pejorative sense. It is a good thing. Learning the basics is a good thing, and yes, that requires memorization, for without the basic facts, there can be no analysis. And by compliance, I assume you mean learning to act appropriately and respectfully, and I don't see that as a bad thing. At a community forum, you asked when someone in the so-called real world takes a test on their own. Well, I would say, considering some of the presentations we've had tonight, consider the SAT, ACT, GRE, GMAT, LSAT, MCAT. How about nurses taking the NCLEX, lawyers taking the bar exam? I suspect pilots, accountants, doctors, and so forth do something similar. I don't really know the acronyms. There are continuing education classes with written tests in many jobs. As an athletic official for the CHASA, I take a written exam on my sport every year and so on. It's pervasive, so I think it's a good thing that taking tests is learned and practiced in school. So yes, I am one of those traditionalists who does not think traditional is a pejorative term, who doesn't always support the vision that you may hold for transformation in education. I'm not the only one. Many people agree with me, and many of them feel they can't speak publicly for fear of retribution. I have experienced such retribution. In fact, that's why I left another district to come to Jeffco, so I know that it does happen. But regardless, welcome to Jeffco. Notwithstanding the above, I'm very much looking forward to working with you, and I think you're off to a great start, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fernald. That concludes public comment part two for the evening. The last and only remaining item on our agenda this evening is development of our future agenda items for the Board of Education. I would ask Ms. Neal to please join us for this work. Please go ahead, Ms. Neal.
Okay, I remember how loud that was when Mr. Fernald was speaking, so if this is too loud, just let me know. What? So your next meeting is a study session, September 21st. You start at 5 o'clock. The item that I have so far is your review of CASB resolutions, so you could take positions in preparation for the fall delegate assembly. If there's anything else that you'd like to add to that evening's agenda, you could, we will still have an agenda prep meeting later in September. Well, next week, I think. Then your next regular meeting is October 5th. You will have music again. I'm not sure who that will be. You have an executive session on the superintendent's evaluation, your first, as you agreed at the retreat, to begin. Honors recognition will be the Everett Middle School Fitness Center, which I think earlier that day you will be participating in a ribbon-cutting ceremony where the governor will be in attendance. And the Wheat Ridge High School students who won a Shell Eco Marathon car event are coming. They'll have a video and a big trophy, they said, to show you. We do not have an ends discussion or monitoring topic at this point, so we'll work on that. You do have a discussion about surplus property for that evening, and that is your agenda at this point for October 5th.
Okay. Any comments or concerns from the Board of Education related to our work calendar? Hearing none, we'll take this information into agenda planning. As you know, things can happen in a hurry, and I suppose we could need to modify this agenda if appropriate, but I think we're satisfied that our work calendar is fine. Ms. Neal?
Thank you.
And with that, then, this meeting is adjourned. And thank you to all who have been in attendance.
Good job.
Thank you.